Arrive and Thrive would like to begin by first acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land of which we recorded this podcast and extend our respect to elders, past, present, and emerging. I have a monkey mind, which means I get distracted and lose my thoughts easily. So I'd like to talk to you about Notion, a productivity software that allows you to track projects and other cool stuff. I've been using Notion for about a year now and have loved the freedom it gives me in my business. I'm a proud Notion affiliate as it is my one-stop shop for the back end of my business and my brain when I'm not using my brain. Does that make sense? I didn't think so. See what I mean by a monkey mind? I use Notion as a database and a way to track my programs, clients, and projects. If you're looking for a digital tool for your team, personal use, or business, you can check it out on our affiliate link in the episode description. Start today and get organized for tomorrow. Hello and welcome back to another episode. First and foremost, I want to express my deepest gratitude to each and every one of you for being part of our growing Arrive and Thrive career podcast family. That was a bit of a mouthful. Your support means the world to me and I truly appreciate your valuable time and attention. If you're finding value in our content and haven't already done so, I want to invite you to hit that subscribe button, become a regular part of our community. Also, feel free to leave a little review as well if you're that way inclined. Your subscription and review is a vote of confidence in what I do, and it fuels my passion to deliver the best content possible to help you and others thrive in their career. To subscribe, simply click the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform, and you'll be in the loop with each new release. Now let's arrive and thrive together and have a little roar. Good morning, Trent. Trent Loader, welcome to the Arrive and Thrive Career Podcast. Sorry, mate, that was a bit sporadic. How are you going?
Sporadic, but okay.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, really, really good. Thanks for having me. It's as I said before, it's an honour to be in such esteemed company of the guests you've had on the show. I'm a regular listener.
Too kind, mate. Too kind. It's a pleasure to have you on. And through one of our guests a few months of actually a couple of years ago now, Dr. Jim Bright suggested that you come on and talk about some of your recent findings and research, but would love you to introduce yourself to our listeners and I suppose what you currently do now and what your main focus has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah, look, it's been a wild ride. I can tell you. I guess if we go back, I spent the first 10 years of my life in social work, mostly in youth work and youth employment, and then I spent 14 years as a teacher in secondary schools. Met a teacher while I was a youth worker, married, can't beat them, join them, so I did a dip in and taught, and you know, it's one of those things in terms of the accidental careers advisor or accidental careers, and we talk about opportunity awareness later. I've always had a fairly good opportunity awareness lens, seeing what's possible, what's available, and I guess being in the industry, but not, being in youth work and youth employment, we're doing careers advising all the time without actually the knowledge that that's what you're doing back in those days, because we didn't have a graduate certificate to go off and do back then. We're talking about the years of the CES. When the CES died, actually, back in the mid-90s, that's where I picked up my first employment gig with the job network provider, because I was the youth worker in the local region and working a lot with the CES. And so I picked up a gig as a case manager for a job network provider.
For those who don't know...
First of that iteration.
Sorry, mate. For those who don't know, the CES was...
Oh, sorry, the Commonwealth Employment Service.
There you go.
So, yeah, I did that for a while, and that sort of exposed me to the greater world of work and the long-term unemployed and the world of that sort of agency slash, government contracting work. And it was interesting, the agency I worked for, which was a common problem I hear, actually really under-tendered for the services they provided. So we did Flex 1, 2, 3, and 4, which was job matching, job club, job search training. And Flex 3 was the case, long-term case management. And Case 4 was NEES, sort of a new enterprise in, you know, employment type schemes. And the agencies had to tender for, you know, what they would provide the service for and what the outcome. Well, a lot of the agencies did very cheaply the 1 and 2, and it relied on the long-term case managers to get people jobs and keep them in jobs, because that's where the greatest return for that investment was. And we sort of kept the agency alive. So there's a lot of pressure on us. And I sort of did job search training as well. And that's where I really enjoyed. The case management was heavy and very emotionally draining, as anyone that does case management counseling does, particularly when you're working with long-term unemployed. So it was a good experience. But what I did enjoy was that half a day a week where I was also doing the job search training. And so I really enjoyed that. The job club, which was known as when the CES days. So it's interesting.
And mate, if so, don't mind me asking, sorry to jump in, if don't mind me asking, do you think like that move to reinstate the CES or revitalize it, is that a good move in terms of the current climate and need, do you feel, for Australians?
Well, I think it's worth a read, because the report's out and it's quite a lengthy report, but just go straight to the recommendations.
And mate, your current role, and this is quite a mouthful, so I hope I get this correct, Assistant Director in the Careers and International Skills Division of the Australian Government Department of Employment and Workplace Relations.
Yeah, so I have to say, I'm completely divorced from that right now.
Okay.
I am not here representing work, that's for sure. Yeah, and you didn't ask me to come on representing work. That's to come on representing any Australian government agency, it would have been a 6-month permission process to do, and then I would be having to write out a script and not deviate from it.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Good
and
insight.
And I really respect that process, because who am I to speak for the government? You know, I'm not just an employee in a mid-tier level in an enormous machine.
Yep.
And machinery government's an amazing process. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. And look, I never expected to be here. I sort of fell in, as I say, accidental career advisor. Not that I'm career advising at the moment, but I came into the National Careers Institute, which is a branch of the Department of Employment and Workplace Relations, in the end of COVID times. And I had an opportunity through a colleague who was working there. We worked in schools together years earlier, Katrina in Melbourne there. And we met on funny enough, an Australian government junket for careers advisors in schools. We were in at ADFA, if you've ever done career advising in schools. But and that's the best thing you can do, is you take your careers advisor to the place that they can then experience and then go back to schools and talk to, you know. So I was in that week, and they flew us over to Canberra and took us through ADFA, and it was amazing. Yeah. Katrina was saying, oh, look, you need to finish your doctorate. Look, come over. We'll give you some work with the National Careers Institute. And I thought, oh, yeah, that sounds like fun. I'll step down, and that's how I got involved. So once in accidental, nothing planned, but saw an opportunity, I can step down from leadership for a while and just concentrate on my doctorate and still do what I love, and that was real career advising. So I actually went back and worked with the ESSL, Essential School Leavers, Essential Support for School Leavers. It was a measure the National Careers Institute put in during COVID. So I came on board there, and we did we offered free 45-minute career counselling sessions to young people, and we also did a trial with unemployed, where anyone could ring up who was on a job search allowance and get free career advice, and I was part of that trial, and that was just fantastic. Mm. It was like a flashback to, you know, 25 to the mid 90s, and the conversations and the stories you get out of those people that were actually prepared to ring up and say, look, I need help. And they're able to use that as part of their mutual obligation.
Yep.
That was a trial. It went for 6 months. And look, that's all been evaluated. I don't know what's going to come of that. I think the government's changed since then, actually, because I actually came in with DESE, which is Department of Employment Skills and Department of Education Skills and Employment. And then that machinery government happened, and then it became DUA. Yep. So they split the one department into two.
Mate, so many acronyms and different times changing.
You want acronyms, you know. We're in the right field for acronyms between government, careers, education.
Yeah.
You know, we've got our own. And so many of them are similar or the same. So someone will be talking about a particular acronym. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's right. And then, hang on, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a completely different acronym. You know, I'm thinking my teacher hat on, and they're thinking something else. Oh, mate.
Yeah.
Funny.
So I come
back to where I was. I married a teacher, went into school for 14 years.
Yep.
Just straight teaching, really, really enjoyed that for 8 years. 8 years straight teaching. I was student welfare coordinator and vet as well. Because a new principal came in 6 weeks after I started teaching, a new principal came in, and I sort of looked at everyone's resumes and said, hang on, you've done 10 years in social work, you've been a youth worker, you've been a counsellor, you've done employment. Hang on, we need a careers teacher.
Yep.
There's no student welfare here. You can start a welfare program. So he sort of took some of the teaching load off me, and I started and set up a student welfare program for the school. It was a P12 college, which was great. And then I also did the careers as well. And at that time, Julia Gillard was the Minister for Education or Employment, whatever she was. And they were offering the $5,000 scholarships for careers advisors in schools. So I said, there was a bit of rhetoric around at the time. We're talking about 2007, 2008, that they were wanting, you know, careers advisors in schools to be qualified. So the onus was on the person in the seat to do it, I guess. And I thought, they haven't studied for a while. This might be a bit of fun. And that's when I came across Jim Bright. So I actually did, you know what it was like in schools. You get these hundreds of faxes put in your pigeonhole every day from different organisations. And there's dozens of them offering career stuff. So that was interesting. And I came across Jim's three-day course. He did counselling, a three-day counselling coaching course. And I never heard of any of it, of course, because it wasn't in that space. I was in the space of careers in schools. It was just really meant pathway planning, unless you know what you're doing. So I went and did the three-day course, and that's where I met Jim. And from there, that got one. I thought, wow, that's one unit off of the grad cert. I'll go do the grad cert at ACU. And, of course, well, why do just the grad cert? Well, that's half the master's. So I went and did the other half, which was the Master's of Education. So unfortunately, that had unintended consequences because you did the master's, you did leadership stuff, and then after 8 years, I moved into head of school. So I took on a principalship. So I spent the last 6 years as a head of school. But I was lucky. I kept the careers advisor with me. Mm. Two reasons. No one else would do it. And no one else wanted to go off and do the qualification. So I got to keep the careers advising through. Sort of dropped the student welfare, and someone else looked after that. But I kept careers, and I sort of kept my finger out of space and really enjoyed it. So from there, I went to Fed Uni and took over Federation College, which was a multi-campus school, an alternative education type setting for the young people. But it was the senior secondary arm of the university. So really a really multi-sectoral university in that it went straight from, you know, years 10 right through to PhD. Most sectors will go, you know, bachelor through to PhD, but Fed Uni goes, you know, certificate one right through to PhD. So it's a fabulous institution. I really enjoyed my time there. COVID hit, unfortunately, during that time. That's when another opportunity came up, and that was my future.
There you go.
So, mate, I went from Fed Uni to my future, and sort of those things sort of fell into line. Hang on, niggling, had to finish doctorate, done the research, have to finish it, you know, want to finish it, but, you know, life gets in the way. Mm. And you can't do it. You can't do it when you're working 14-hour days, 7 days a week.
Mm.
So you've got to reevaluate, step back and say, okay, what's important to me at this stage of my life? Mm. And then reevaluate. So that's what I did. So as I said, accidental, but is it accidental or is it just opportunity aware? I don't know. I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, opportunity aware, or another saying I always hear is like the happenstance space too.
Oh, happenstance learning theory, yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar.
So yeah. it's that being open, and I think, you know, every time I read or listen to people like yourself, there's always this element of like hitting that pause button, reflecting, going, okay, is this bringing me closer to what I want, or is it pushing, you know, what I want away? And
yes,
quite often, yeah. I think a lot of people unfortunately find themselves in this position in their career where they are getting pushed into areas that they don't necessarily want to do because other people are making decisions for them. And so it's that important piece of going, pause, okay, I really want to finish that doctorate. I really need to make sure I prioritize that, as opposed to someone saying, oh, well, this just seems like a good opportunity because it's been put in my lap. I need to take it, type thing.
And that's exactly right. You get exposed to opportunity all the time. It's whether you're recognizing the opportunity or letting it float by you.
Mm.
And that's where, you know, that's where a lot of my research came up, that I was constantly getting young people coming back after graduating. And it's fortuitous today that the ATAR's dropped here in Victoria. You know, this would have been one of our busiest days when we were back in school because the ATAR's dropped. What happened? If the kids are not prepared, then they're often panicking. So if their career education isn't spot on, and I should say that lightly, we know how difficult it is in schools. But if you're properly prepared early on, then this is not calamity either way, it's opportunity. Mm. And it's how you reframe that. And now we're able to recognize this is an opportunity. I didn't get the ATAR, that's right. We've got plan B, C, D, E, and F. Or we know well enough the dozens of pathways to get into absolutely anything we want now. I often used to, it's a good thing at conferences, you know, anytime you do speaking engagements, to say, okay, I did it when I was speaking up in Darwin last year. Okay, room full of careers advisors, throw something at me. What do you think? Give me an area that you think we couldn't possibly find a pathway into. And you get people saying, oh, you know, vascular surgery or, you know, this and that. No. Okay, what did we get? No ATAR, did VCAL, which was a vocational major type thing. Let's find a pathway. Let's go certificate three Let's go certificate three in allied health, or certificate three in personal care attending. Then we'll go certificate four in nursing. Then we'll go into diploma in nursing. Then we'll go bachelor in nursing. There's always a pathway to get into anything, and this is a golden time, Tyson. I'm really saddened for purely selfish, of course, but saddened for myself because there wasn't these things back when we were kids.
Yeah,
I should say when I was a kid. I think I'm probably 10 years ahead of you. Just by comparing the grey in our beards.
Hello, friends. When I'm not hitting record here on the podcast, I'm delivering career management and life design workshops in schools. So far, we've supported over 45,000 individuals and counting since starting in 2019. We're in 100 schools across Victoria, a few in New South Wales, and a couple in Queensland. But we still have so much more to do. Growing our community member base is a huge focus for us, as our mission is to help all young Australians develop meaningful careers and live a fulfilling life. If we can teach young people important career management and life skills early, we hope that these skills will serve them well into their life post-school. Hooray! If you're a teacher, educator, principal, or school leader looking to add a little extra career education and entertainment to the curriculum, check out our workshops at arrivethrive.com.au. You can download our program brochure, learn about our workshops, see our prices, and read what teachers and students have said about us and how we can support your community. Thanks again for tuning in. Let's take a deeper dive into your research and the focus that you had on with with the chaos theory of careers, because this is a big area that we really enjoy here at Arrive and Thrive, and something that we share a lot with parents and students alike as well, this concept that we can't control, you know, what's going to happen in the future. And instead of getting connected with specific roles or specific industries, let's focus more on skill sets and transferable capacities.
You're saying all the right words, Tyson. Skill sets, transferable. How many times were you as a young person asked, I mean, even, you may be guilty of it yourself, how many times you've asked someone, what do you want to do when you grow up?
Yeah, it's a classic.
How many times? It is a classic, that's right. But as educators, we should be asking not what do you want to be, but what problems do you want to solve? Mm. It's black and white. A job is a problem. You're hired to do a job, but if there's no problem, there's no job. So what problems do you want to solve? Because a job in essence is solving a problem.
Yeah.
You're paid to do a job. You solve a problem for the boss. And if you don't have a problem, you don't have a job, which is, of course, another problem.
Mm.
Tongue in cheek, of course. But and we regularly hear from employers, particularly when I was back in school days, that, you know, I can teach anyone the skills. So it's not as enough to say, oh, no, I can't do that, I can't do this. Employers will teach young people how to do the job. What they keep telling us is that they can't teach attitude.
Mm.
And I'm sure you've heard that before.
Completely.
And they'll often say, you know, that's the teacher's job or that's the parent's job. We'll teach the kids, but we can't teach them the attitude. We can't teach them initiative. We can't teach them to show up on time.
Resilience.
To wear the uniform correctly. Yeah, exactly right. So as you were saying, you know, we teach people what we should be doing is teach people how to navigate uncertainty. And that's the chaos theory.
Mm.
You know, we can't be reducing people and putting people into boxes. We don't neatly fit into stages.
Mm.
We are individuals. We are complex, dynamical, open systems that are continually changing, operating within other complex dynamical systems. And those other open, dynamical, complex human systems. It's fascinating stuff. And as I said, it piqued my interest because, you know, working with young people all those years, and often I'd be working with young people that are just coming out of youth detention centres, or they're coming in, or as for a while I was at Uniting Care in Ballarat. And that was some of the best years of my life. I have, you know, really fond memories of Uniting Care. And we started a youth detox centre. There's a lot of big drug and alcohol funding were around, and we started a youth detox centre and working at, was a residential detox as well. So we'd have stand-up shifts. And, you know, it's amazing the souls that will get bared in the middle of the night when a young person is detoxing from amphetamines. Do you know what I mean? And I often used to see and hear, and that's part of that narrative as well, drawing a narrative out of people, hearing their story. And it always saddens me that, you know, young people are still in that sense trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? Trying to please someone else because they've been told all their life they can do whatever they want. You can be whatever you want to be when you grow up. I know you've heard that, Tyson. Mm. And I just think that is so unfair. It just sets people up for failure. You can be whatever you want.
How else would you what do you think is a better frame to place? Because it's funny, Trent, when you say that, because as a parent of like two young kids, I like them thinking the fact that they can do anything that they really put their mind to. But I also can see your perspective as well around that frame and that connect that probably ingrained thought of that as that narrative in their later years, perhaps not serving them as best as it can.
Yeah, look, I don't know what you see. I suspect you see similar, given we're in the same fields, but I seem to think and observe as I go in schools all around the country these days, there seems to be a rise in social constructivism in education and also, of course, in creative element. And I've never really subscribed to it. Do you know what I mean? The idea that we socially construct the world. And I think we do to a degree, but, you know, reality does exist beyond our ability to perceive it. Now, I know that's getting a bit philosophical, but, you know, the chaos theory careers, you know, supposes we believe a realist constructive approach is the way to go, accepting that reality does exist beyond our ability to perceive it. And therefore, we are not the center of the universe and we cannot perceive and control everything or bend it to our wills. Mm. And if you've been told your whole life that you can do anything you want, you can be anything you want to be, well, that's a constructivist approach, isn't it? You can socially construct it because you can do it. Well, that's wrong. It's garbage. It can be very difficult working with students who have been taught that their whole life. And of course, usually they're being told this by their family. And I know we, as parents, often, you know, you're wanting to come across and we're all very well intentioned. But it can be really, really dangerous, especially when they fail, when young people fail. And I've got to say, I often felt like the dream crusher as a career advisor, particularly at year 9, 10 level. Mr. Lowe is a dream crusher. Because the reality is that more often than not, young people haven't taken into account the reality of their own talent, or unfortunately, sometimes the lack thereof. I'm always open to using myself as an example. You know, I wanted, when I was a young person, 1986 was, you know, year 7 for me, I wanted to be a fighter pilot, an astronaut, you know, Top Gun. The space shuttle was, you know, I wanted to fly the space shuttle that was around. But you know what? You know, try something, I know you'd be surprised. But the reality is, I'm just not that smart. my mind just cannot get around that high-level physics needed to be a fighter pilot. You know, my talents lie elsewhere. You know, and as soon as I know where they lie, I'll let you know. But they certainly don't lie in theoretical physics. It's just beyond me. And that's saddened to say because, you know, talking in assemblies and things like that, I was the junior, I taught middle year science, year 7 and 8. So I'd be constantly playing with rockets and in chemistry, showing a love for the learning, but also recognizing that there's a level that my mind just simply cannot get over. Mm. It's the reality. The reality is I'm a realist constructivist. The reality is I cannot do it. And I have to accept that reality. You know, as you see other examples such as young people wanting to do medicine or play in the NBA. You know, they come up short. You know, they're not even playing A grade in their own local league, but they've been told, no, you go, you can join the NBA. It's setting people up to fail, Tyson, unless we give them a little reality therapy so they don't waste their lives pursuing something they're clearly not suitable.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's like this, like you need this in some way. You need like positive tension there. So like, for example, you take like an example like Michael Jordan. Like he didn't make his high school basketball team but then became the – arguably the best player that we've ever seen. And so you almost need, it's almost like you need in certain outlier circumstances, you need that level of doubt placed on you to drive you hard to pursue a certain goal.
Absolutely.
That's
good. But I also say, let's not crush your dreams completely. Let's keep practicing.
Yep.
But let's look at this might be more of a hobby than a career.
Mm.
Thomas Edison said genius is 1% perspiration. Sorry, 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. Yeah. Well, let's fund your dream. Let's look at a career. Let's look at plan B maybe, and then you can concentrate on that basketball. And as soon as you're playing local league A grade at the very least, you know, until then, let's focus on another potential path.
That question, like, you know, I love that question of what problems would you like to solve is such an effective frame. What are some other questions that you believe we need to be asking young people, as opposed to, you know, instead of the classics like, what do you want to do when you finish school? What do you want to do when you grow up? You know, what's your dream job? Like anything that comes to mind for your end?
Yeah, look, I am very much a narrative career counsellor. I use all the chaos approaches, but narrative is one of the approaches. I was always a big fan of Mark Savickas's career. You'd be familiar with the career construction interview, and that works with the career construction interview in its totality works across age groups, but you can really design it for the younger years. I used to really dig down and delve into it. I used to love using the strengths cards and other sort of type cards. They're all just a facility to bring out a narrative. So whether you're using cards or you're using a careers collage, I actually wrote an article back in 2009 on the careers collage and implementing that into career education. Funny enough, after COVID, I've only really written two articles in journals and that were printed 2009 and 2011 using chaos theory techniques in career education. And you get spasmodic response, but I'll tell you what, Dyson, COVID was good business for careers, for chaos theory, because I'm constantly getting hits on, people have used and referenced those two articles, and they're reaching 15 plus years old. But coming back to the narrative, I get lost in my own metaphors. I use the career construction because it sort of draws out all those questions. What problems do you want to solve? It's a quick and simple one. I was never a big fan of follow your passion, because that predisposes you have a passion, and for those of us that had passions that weren't able to pursue due to lack of talent, and this is it, I'll use myself as an example. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. That's where my passion lied. Well, that passion wasn't going to be followed career-wise. So
I want to be a professional surfer, Trent.
Problem to solve. Sorry, Tyson?
I want to be a professional surfer.
Do you have any talent?
It's not to the level that it needs to be a professional, but I think,
keep practicing.
Yeah. And I think like building on what you're saying there, like one thing that we quite enjoy focusing on is that ikigai concept. I'm not sure if you've come across that in your travels. I'm sure you have, where it's what your strengths are, what you're good at, what you believe the world needs, what's going to pay you well as well, which I think is, and pay you well doesn't necessarily mean $1 million or whatever, like a high pay bracket. It's what's going to pay you to be able to do what you want to be able to do.
I
think that's such a good frame, because that, what problems do you want to solve? That clearly relates to what do you think the world needs? Because someone might think, I want to open up a cafe, and the problem I want to solve is, a poor, badly made cup of coffee. And that problem is extremely important to me, because I know the flow and effect of what a good cup of coffee might have for someone in their day and making them happier and more of a positive person. So it's all
having the awareness that you don't put your coffee place in the mix of, a dozen Starbucks in 5 meter radius.
Totally.
which was a problem.
Totally. And so it's like this, like I feel like these types of questions can happen on a micro and a macro scale as well.
Yeah, completely agree. I am a big fan from what you were just saying about finding the job, but also knowing the income. I was a big fan of playing the real game, and you'd be familiar with the real game series.
I'm not actually. Can you share?
Oh wow! Yeah, look, get on Google the real game.
Yeah.
I was. It was very early noughties, And the Department of Education in Victoria funded PD, and I think they might have funded some of the games for the schools. But the game runs through, essentially can be done over a term. I actually put it into the timetable in a careers unit over a term. And you're basically, there's 52 different career profiles, and it ticks all the boxes across that on how to learn a career, how to look at the day in the life of that particular job. It looks at the world of work in terms of who you're interacting with, what your transferable skills are, and it goes into then, and it's very structured, and you're playing, everyone in the class has a different job. And often I would assign the jobs, and there's 52 of them, and it has the exact, you know, what they're paid a week and what their likely interactions will be. But it also goes into, you know, your taxes and what you're paying in tax and what you're paying, what your net and your gross pays are. So it's really good for year 7, 8, right up to years 10, 11, 12. There are several versions and iterations of it, and gets into complexities. But it also adds to real-world planning. This is what I earn. This is how many, you know, then it goes into work-life balance. You've got so many hours in a week. This is what work's going to take. How are you filling up? But also, this is how much money you're earning. Can you also afford to do these things you're saying you do? And the, one of the best ones is the career cloud. And actually, I was keynoting up in CEANT, the Career Education Association in the Northern Territory, last year. And I spent a whole workshop with a room full of school careers advisors. And to my surprise, many of them had never heard of the career, the real game either. So what I did was, whilst I was talking, I actually had them playing the real game on their table and back and forthing, and I'd come back with particular points. I say, I want you to look at your dream cloud. So the first activity, and in the handout, it's got a list of cars, a list of houses, a list of sports activities. It's got, this is what it costs to buy them, this is what it costs to rent them or lease them. And you're giving them those things first and say, okay, everyone has to live somewhere, cut and paste in your dream cloud, cut and paste somewhere you're going to live. You can have a, you know, two houses if you want. One can be a beach house. Then you've got a list of cars. Put a car, you've got to get somewhere. And, you know, activities, put your activities in. And that's your dream cloud. And then we go through an activity with your job. And now we've broken down your pay, and then we're working out your budget. Well, okay, this is your house, this is your repayments, this is, you know, the next activity is called the reality check. Mm-hmm. And you can see how that might fit in with my realist point of view, that now we're doing that reality check. Well, hang on, this is the job I'm doing. This is the life I want. There's no way I can afford this. And so then the next activity is to actually rip that house and those activities and that particular car off and finding one that I can afford in the job and pay I'm getting. It's a very, very powerful game. So if advisors out there haven't heard of it, there's actually an online version now. I'm more of a tactile person, and especially with kids in class, if I can get them off devices, I'll do so. So the first thing I do is say, okay, put your devices away. Here's some handouts, here's some paste and glue, and let's do some hands-on stuff. And that's what the real game is. Sometimes I'll let them use a calculator for doing their budgeting, because that can just speed things along. But you can draw that out over a term, and I got nothing but positive feedback from playing the real game. And I get it from parent-teacher interviews, because the parents have come back and say, oh, well, you gave him this job that he was interested in. Well, he doesn't want to do it now because it's not going to, you know, and that's, of course, opens another conversation. Well, you know, what was the motivation for wanting that job? Let's match that motivation of your lifestyle with the passion and the lifestyle you want in the 9-to-5 minimum job you're going to have. And, of course, you know what a complex conversation that can be.
Yeah, it's such a good point, Trent, because I know the conversations that I have with grads, as well as high school students, and even my friends and people who have come out the other side of university, and they go, you know, no one, it's very rare that you come across a grad who knows that the pay bracket that they should be earning immediately after studies and then also well into their career as well within their industry. It's wild. It blows my mind because it, and again, it could just be perspective around the work that we do as careers educators. To me, that's such an important pillar in the decision-making process that so many young people do not take into account. And there's a lot of assumptions too around certain industries and earning potential and lifestyle, I suppose, asterisks that go next to that as well, which quite often aren't true as well. So I love your approach.
Totally.
That realist
perspective. And if you can do that at the year 7, 8 level, because most advisors are in secondary schools, I would have no problem doing that into primary either. Grade 5, 6, great time. Let's face it, I've been a proponent of primary school career education forever. And Tristram recently wrote an article on it, which is great because it was able to quote. It's good when an academic of Tyson's level writes something that can, back exactly what you've been saying for years, because then you can quote a credible source. Mm. So it's a shame he didn't write it years ago when I was doing it, because I'd find, I'd do PD to the staff to try and, my mantra was always every teacher's a careers teacher. And that was always my mantra. If you're a teacher, you're a careers teacher. Let's teach you how to implement it. Let's teach you how to look at, every teacher knows how to look at curriculum. Well, here's a careers curriculum. Let's integrate that into your class, whether that be math, science, soc, whatever. I always put that addendum. Every teacher is a careers teacher, yes, but there's only one careers advisor. And I would be very specific with that with teachers. I'm the careers advisor. I've got the insurance. If I'm wrong, if I'm sued, I've got the insurance. I'm the careers advisor. But you're a careers teacher. You can teach this stuff. Just don't give the advice. Send them my way for the advice. And teachers were always wrapped in that, because I found that a lot of teachers were very reticent about this stuff because they don't want to be sued. They're often complained about by parents as it is for saying things in class. That the current national lack of teachers is another conversation entirely. Mm. But do you know what I mean? If you can alleviate that worry from teachers and say, look, the risk is on me. Teach them how to integrate the careers curriculum into their classes. And I mean, essentially I do that for them. I wouldn't write their lessons for them because that's their job. Well, who writes lessons when you're a teacher anymore? You're just knowledgeable enough to integrate this into a class. It's how to do it and it's where to do it at what level. So what I do is you do the P-12, you run the PD, the professional development with the teachers. And then I go into faculty meetings and I work with the faculties to say, okay, let's do this. Careers week's coming up. Let's do something special and let's all push it in and let's do a whole of school activity. And that was one way to really incorporate that at least some year levels or all year levels were involved in for at least the week. And of course, you'd be more structured the latter years. But look, it's not rocket science. It's been around a long time. I've always been a fan of the DOTS model. Bill Law, Law and Watts. Mm. It's been around forever, DOTS. And, of course, that's decision learning, opportunity awareness, which is why I was always a proponent, transition learning and self-awareness. So DOTS. But, of course, there was a bad ordering. And if you a simple reordering of DOTS model turns it to SOD. DOTS demonstrates a process to inform decision-making in career education. So if we look at SOD, as we know, it's necessary to consider and identify students' strengths, interests, personalities, and values before making a career decision. So instead of DOTS, we turn to SODs. So this sort of process at a career level holistically, then this knowledge students are able to make more easily navigate the multitude of options available to them and integrate important elements, such as their personal values, into that decision making, because we can't do it for them. We can do it with them when we can guide them. Mm. And that's the best we can do, really, isn't it? We can guide them.
Completely. Sorry, you go, mate.
So career education platforms should be designed that way. And what we want to do as career educators is to increase the agency in young people by allowing them to and encouraging self-exploration. So if a platform or program is set up to allow that flow and create agency in young people, then we've done our job. And that's why I'm a big fan of the Become career education model. I don't know whether you've heard of Become.
Yeah, with Jim and
That's right. Jim's involved now.
Yeah.
But it's, apart from being evidence-based, it doesn't pigeonhole anyone. Do you know what I mean? It seeks to develop agency by creating awareness of occupations. Mm. And that awareness leads to aspiration. And developing the agency in students, they'll aspire. They're aware. They'll often say, oh, look, I've seen this. I didn't know I could do that.
Mm.
So you're opening opportunity, you're becoming aware, you're developing agency without pigeonholing them to become, you know, when you're doing a lot of those career interest tests, which I'm not a fan of because it pigeonholes, good for a greater conversation, but not great for self-exploration because it'll just give you a limited number of jobs. And if you don't know to search further, then, you know, you're limiting that agency, aren't you?
Mm. It's a good point you raise, mate, because something that my own little theory I've developed is that given the day and age that we live in with Gen Z and the fact that they can gain information, freedom flow of information through the internet, social media, they can get an answer for something that they need straight away. They shop on Amazon, yes. They get it to their doorstep the next day, whatever it may be.
ChatGPT,
the list goes on. I have this theory that quite often when it comes to this careers piece is that they want to be told what they need to do in many cases. So like that's why they enjoy some of these career assessments where it's like, okay, I've put in this, that tells me I need to do this. And they always go straight to the jobs recommended for their capacity, their strengths, their interests, etc. And that's, I think, the challenge that a lot of schools face and with dealing with parents and young people is this, they want an answer around what is the best piece for my child. And it's like the answer is not simple. It's not a one word answer. It's not a one job. It's not a one industry. It's like empowering them to be that, as you were saying, that to have agency, to explore, to be curious, to not know the answer and be okay with that. And I think that is going against people's default in this day and age. And I can only talk about my own experiences and my generation being a millennial, but I feel that as we get further access to information, further access to technology, further access to, you know, a lot of helpful tools, it can also be counterintuitive around that reflection and that process of developing a curiosity around, okay, well, what is that is really important to me? And how do I go about making a decision? Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And we need to encourage our young, our students, our kids to be curious, but to be discerning because of the information out there. And that comes back to this is greater than career education. This is cyber security. This is digital literacy. It's being discriminating on the information you're reading to interrogate it before integrating it, if you know what I mean. Because there's just so much out there, as you said. That's why you really need a trusted platform that you know the information there is correct. And that's when it comes back to that evidence-based stuff. But unless young people are guided in the correct way, they will pick up and they'll ask platforms like ChatGPT. And I know Google landed their new one, Gemini, came out last week. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Gemini because it's from Google.
Mm.
But either way, you know, Bard's been around for some time. But I actually demonstrated live that, you know, some of these things lie. I was looking for a reference to something I was writing, and I asked Bard, for a particular reference for this, and can you tell me X, Y, and Z on this topic and give me some references? Anyway, I came and told a great story, as the AIs do. They'll print out, they'll give you a narrative and give you great information. And then it was the platform said, oh, well, X, Y, and Z in 2000 said this, this, and this, and X, Y, Z said this in 2002. I said, oh, great, that's great. Now, if I had taken that as was and then put it into an article, it'd be a laughing stock. It sounded good on the platform, but when you actually integrated it, and I was showing an audience this live, okay, let's look this person up on an academic database, and I went to the ACU library, bang, 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 these people didn't exist. I am not kidding. They did not exist, and they did not say these things. And I said this in debate. I said, that's incorrect. These people don't exist. And all it says is, oh, yeah, look, I'm sorry. Try this one. And yeah. It just went on and on. And I was gobsmacked. This is supposed to be helping, where it can actually set people up for failure. A little bit like saying you can do whatever you like with your life.
Full circle.
It can set you up for failure.
Yeah. Trent, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about these types of things. I really do appreciate it. A question that we ask all of our guests is, because this podcast started with a dear friend of mine, Dan Lenardi, who is no longer with us.
But I remember.
Yeah. One of the ways in which we honour him is asking all of our guests, you know, what are you roaring about?
Taco.
Taco. I'm roaring.
And this can be anything. I mean, obviously you roar about chaos theory and careers education like myself.
Yes.
But are there other things that you are really into at the moment that you find are complementing, you know, your philosophies, or things that you just are going, you know what, this is great. It's helping me live the type of life I want to live.
Yeah, good question. I guess I've only recently discovered a life outside of work and doctorate, because I found for so many years, you know, you're working to build your career and working to, you know, support your family, et cetera. And then on the weekends and after hours, you know, I was doing a doctorate and researching and writing. And now that's submitted, you know, it's only been the last few weeks I thought on the weekend, oh, wow, there's a life outside of the computer.
Yeah.
So I'm rediscovering it. I'm not, you know, it's all internal, of course. You feel a bit guilty. You know, often feel, oh, no, I can really kind of enjoy myself. I've actually got to, I should be working. Do you know, to now have to, I can now take that away and say, well, no, hang on, I don't have to feel guilty. I'm done. I've ticked something off. And that's a real sense of self-satisfaction. So for me, I'm really enjoying time, unfiltered time with family, in that I'm going to basketball, taking the kids, because I am working from home, you know, working with an office in Canberra, working 100% remote. I'm actually really able to now engage in family time. I'm the one that turns the computer off at 5 o'clock now, and don't think about work until the next day.
Yep.
Which is a real, really different to teaching, of course, where you never switch off. And the laptop's permanently on, because you're either correcting, marking, writing reports, or responding to emails. You never really turn off. So I'm enjoying a life now where I can turn off. I am getting a balance. I'm actually seeing my child play basketball these days. The youngest is now 14, which is scary. He's just finished year 8. And so he's at that right age now that I can really enjoy taking him to careers expos.
Yeah.
Because I always said year 7, 8, best time for parents, take your kids to the careers expos. Show interest and go with them. Don't drop them off or wait to year 10 for them to go. Take them to year 7, 8, because that's the time they can really get into careers expos and see what's out there. Too late by the time they get to year 10, they're too busy thinking about making a decision. No. Do it. In fact, I used to say, do it in primary school, grade 5, 6. Their careers expos are fabulous for kids. They'll go and they'll pick up things and they'll absorb what's around them without any pressure of picking a job. They're just looking at what's out there. And that's what I really like about primary school career education. It's not about picking a job. It's about seeing what's out there,
yep.
Seeing the world of work, looking at work-life balance and getting that right before you get to our age.
Mm.
And realize you've been doing it wrong for all these years. So, you know, that's the time to do it. So am I railing against anything? It's vet. I've always been a big proponent for, big advocate, not proponent, for the vocational education training system, vet. We know that 80% of the jobs of the future are going to be accessible via a vet pathway. My own son, my eldest is now 19, once again, scary. He is, and I'm very proud to say, a second year apprentice plumber. So out of very academic parents and both teachers, we've got an apprentice plumber. And I really don't know what the youngest is going to do. I, like any other parent, I'm hoping medicine or law. but of course, it'll be whatever makes him happy. Mm-hmm. And that's what we see with my eldest, you know, go out there, let's try some things. And lucky at the time, I was, you know, part of vet coordinator, you often do the work experience stuff. And it was the best part of the job. I used to love doing the work experience and going out and visiting our students in workplaces. And so I got my eldest into as many work experiences as he could, hands-on, do what you want, try everything. And, you know, he just landed on plumbing.
Mm.
I'm just really happy that it's one of those professions where he'll never be unemployed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he'll earn more money than me very shortly.
Well, mate, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your insights. We really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure.
Awesome. And, mate, how can people connect with you and see your updates and see your research once it comes out and all that type of thing?
Well, that's a good question. It's being examined at the moment. The CDAA conference is next year in Melbourne.
Yep.
In October. So I'll certainly be there. I'm on the conference organising committee. So it will be a cracker of a conference. So I encourage everyone to come to the CDAA 2024. I know we will be having a live band, so conference dinner will also be awesome.
There you go.
As it usually is. But LinkedIn is the best way to contact me if you're on LinkedIn. I don't often post much, but when something's worth posting, I do. I keep remembering it's LinkedIn, it's not Facebook.
Yeah.
So I post what's appropriate, and I posted time in New Zealand, of course, and I often share what I think's worth sharing, so LinkedIn's probably the best way.
Perfect. Awesome, mate. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tyson.
Pleasure.